History Month is just about over, but that doesn't mean we have to stop caring or stop sharing. Today, I want to talk about an African-American boy who went missing almost 40 years ago. Hi, this is The Missing Ones. I'm Liberty Campbell.
And I'm Alexis Peterson.
Before we get started, I want to share a quick update for those of you who are not following us over on Instagram or TikTok or any of our other social media, which you should be if you're not. The podcast Crimeaholics posted on February 18th that the body of Mildred Alexis Oldcrow has been found. I did an episode on her last month, and it will be linked in the show notes. As more information comes available, we will be keeping you updated over on Instagram and our other social media, so make sure that you guys are following us on there. Why do I have to run out of breath so fast? I don't know how to, like, breathe.
Power through it.
I don't know how to breathe and talk at the same time. I don't know if something's wrong with me or if I'm just really out of shape, which is also a possibility, but still.
You just need to take singing lessons, and that way you can learn how to breathe.
Yeah, because I have the money and the time for singing lessons, right?
Very true. But everything's online now, so.
I know. I'm so tired of COVID. I'm so tired of being online all the time.
Yeah, I mean, like, part of it's good and then part of it's bad. Because, like, you know, if that didn't happen, then Zoom wouldn't have become a big thing. And we wouldn't have been able to do this podcast together. Because currently we're, like, you know, halfway across the United States.
Not halfway. I mean, you're literally on the other side and I'm
in the middle.
I'm a state away from California, which is the end of the earth as far as I'm concerned. But
yeah.
No, I guess you're right. I mean, like, Zoom has been, I think, a really big blessing for a lot of people. And I think it's a lot like Skype, but I think it's better than Skype was or is, I guess. I don't know. I used Skype at my old job a lot. But we only used it for, like, the chatting, like, the IMing. And I don't know if you remember, do you remember, like, the AOL instant message or the Hotmail instant message? Did you ever have that?
I didn't have that. I didn't get an email or, like, anything like that until middle school, and it was late middle school. But I know, like, the concept and know, like, people who talked about it and, you know.
I don't even remember who I would, like, IM with. I know there was a boy I would IM with. I just don't remember which boy. probably some of my friends, too. And then there was MySpace. Did you have a MySpace?
I didn't. I wasn't allowed to.
I'm pretty sure I wasn't. I can't remember if I wasn't allowed to. I know I wasn't allowed to have a Facebook. And when we were in China, they had, like, a computer set up in one of our rooms, and my mom was in the bath, and so I went and snuck onto my Facebook while I had the chance. I don't know why I was allowed to have a MySpace, but not a Facebook.
I think that's because Facebook was newer, and there's a lot more issues with Facebook and people, like, you know, adults trying to lure children, and I think that was a huge thing because my mom was very, you know, strict about it.
Yeah. Speaking of that, I made a TikTok the other day about a girl, Savannah Childress. She went missing from North Carolina, I believe. I would have to double check. But she went missing. I believe she's been found. But she was talking to someone on a website called Emerald Chat. Have you ever heard of that?
No, I haven't.
Okay, have you heard of Omugle?
Yes.
Okay.
My cousin, I've been on there when I was younger. I thought it was Omegle.
I've heard it said both ways. I don't know. I don't know, but did you ever do the video chats? You would know if you did.
I'm trying to remember. I think we did, but I think we did it with people we knew, or we just, like, it was a real quick, like, you know.
Well, we talked to me and my best friend. We talked to so many strangers. We never gave our real names or our real location. And we never like gave any information that could like give them any real information. And I mean, unless they were like some kind of crazy hacker person, they didn't know where we were unless they like were tracking our IP address. But I don't know how I got away with that for so long. I talked to so many strangers. In fact, one time I remember I was video chatting with some guy and my mom walked in and I didn't want to hang up. So I just barely closed my computer and he goes, "What the hell?" And my mom goes, "What is that?" And I was like, "Nothing." And he goes, "What's going on?" And I totally got busted. And like, she still didn't do anything. I still talk to strangers all the time. And and now I beg strangers to follow me on Instagram. So funny how the world has changed.
Very true. But I feel like that is, I don't know. I feel like it's two different worlds though. Because I feel like social media has just become such a norm rather than like, because I feel like when we talk and like ask people to like and subscribe and like when we post and I feel like we're talking into a void, but then on chat sites like that, you are speaking directly to that person.
Yeah. Well, after I read about Savannah Childress, I went onto that website, onto the Emerald website, and within 30 seconds of being there, I was asked if I was horny. They didn't even know if I was male or female at that point. Not even 30 seconds. I was like, so, okay. I mean, like, that's how it was when I was a kid, too. And I don't know if I just, like, I must have thought it was funny or something. Because I remember my friend and I, like, wanting to, like, tease these people and, like, joke around with them. But I was just, like, my mind was, like, blown away. And then there were a couple of them that I told them I was 15 and they were like, "Oh, I'm 18. And like, they should have immediately clicked off. Like, it should have been like, "Nope." But they didn't. They were like, "Oh, 15-year-old, cool, no big deal." Like, red flags. So my point is, people, teach your children about internet safety. And maybe every once in a while, look at what they're doing on the computer. Don't like invade their privacy, but I don't know how to explain it because I never shared any like real personal information. We even use like fake names. So yeah. I don't know. It's so hard because in my head, I'm like, it's common sense. Do not give out your information. But there's people that do it. There's kids that do it all the time. It's really scary.
Yeah, I feel like some people are just more like, I don't know. I feel like they're more like open and more just obviously trusting of everyone, which it's good to like trust people, but you have to set boundaries too.
Absolutely. I mean, I was talking to my niece the other day and I told her the same things I told you. I said, you do not give out your real name. You do not give out the state you live in. You do not give out your age. You do not give out any information about yourself. You don't use your real name. You know, you just, if you want to talk to these people, fine, but do not ever give any information, especially your phone number or anything like that. And do not leave that website. There's an app called Kik. Have you ever heard of that?
Yes. K-I-K.
Yeah, K-I-K. And I used that a ton. I'm like, I'm sitting here and I feel like a big hypocrite. Because I did all of the things I'm saying not to do. Like, I did all of this. I know not to do this because I did this. And then, but leaving that chat website for an app like Kik or something like that can be even more dangerous. Because then you start to trust that person and then you're opening up to them and you're giving them real information. And it's just not a good situation. So if you're a teenager and you're listening to this podcast, don't give any real information to people. That is just, don't do it. It's dumb. It's not smart. I guarantee it's not really a 16-year-old boy named Jake. Like, be smart about it.
Well, my friend just sent me an article that we posted to our Instagram recently about this huge human trafficking bust And that's literally what the police did, was they went to websites like that posing as children and anything that should not be, like, you know, automatically click off. And that's how they got their perps, was they literally, like, you know, posed and got their suspects.
Yeah, you cannot trust anybody on the internet. It's just not, it's not possible unless you know that person in person, you have met them, or you have known them for a very long time. I have a lot of internet friends that I've never met in person, but I've literally been internet friends since we were kids. Like, and that, I mean, it's a big group of us, and I would trust those girls with my life. Like, I know that sounds so silly, but I know them. I've talked to them through Facebook. I've talked to them through cell phone. Like, I know them, but I've known them for years and they have never once made me feel unsafe. So just, like, be smart. Don't talk to people who you don't trust. And if you do want to talk to people that you don't know, that's fine, but be smart about it. Don't be stupid. Don't give out your personal information. Never agree to meet somebody. Like, that's a big no-no. Have you ever seen the movie Megan is Missing?
I haven't.
So it's horrible. Like, it's been a long time since I've watched it, and I've seen some, like, different opinions on it. But parents, if you want to teach your kids to be safe on the internet, I suggest to you that you let them watch this movie. I will find the link or find the trailer for it, and I will share it on our social media. But I suggest that movie. It is about a girl and her best friend who both go missing after talking to the same guy on the internet. So, and it's based on a true story. The whole thing is not true, but it is based on multiple true stories. So if you are wanting to teach your kids about it, I suggest either you watch Megan is Missing, or you let your kids watch Megan is Missing, or you watch it and then they watch it, whatever you want to do. But I personally feel like it's a good resource.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's lots of other sources, either talking through, like, counselors or just, like, finding information through schools to figure out, hey, what is the best way where I can let my child be on social media but still be safe and be aware?
Yeah, I think that a big part of it is being open with your kids and, like, and not punishing them and not shaming them for talking to people or for being on social media, because it's the new normal. It's normal for kids to have social media. It's normal to have people you don't know on Snapchat. I mean, there's, like, a list of people I don't know, which is why I don't ever put anything, like, super personal on my Snapchat. Keep an eye on that kind of thing, because it's scary. It's a scary world. We could do an entire episode on this. I mean, and maybe we will, but, like, my point is talk with your kids. And kids, be smart about who you're talking to on the internet. That's all I have to say, is be smart about who you're talking to and what you're telling them. Do you want to go ahead and give our listeners a disclaimer?
Absolutely. Just a quick disclaimer. This episode will talk about assault, child death, and abuse. If these things are triggering to you, please proceed with caution.
So with it being the last week of Black History Month, I wanted to cover the story of a little African-American boy who went missing back in 1983. This story starts on February 2nd of 1983. Aura Owens had gone out with some of her friends to the Enlisted Men's Club at Moffett Field Naval Air Station in Mountain View, California. Her and her friends were out having a good time, talking to guys, and then she returned home to her three young boys. The next night on February 3rd, after everyone had settled down for the night, a man broke into the home where Aura and her three boys were sleeping. That same man went on to attack and severely beat Aura in her bed. Sometime during the attack, 5-year-old Mitchell woke up to the struggle. He came into the room where his mom was being attacked, only to witness this horrific sight. This man was on top of his mother while she was yelling at him to run away. when the attacker finally saw that the toddler had walked in, he began to strangle Aura with a telephone cord until she passed out.
Awful. I can't imagine how scary that must be and, like, traumatizing.
Right? I mean, Scarlett doesn't even like it when Duncan and I play fight. Like, it's... toddlers are really in tune to, like, stuff like that, so I can't even begin to imagine how scared this little boy was. The next morning, Aura was found by her neighbors and immediately taken to the hospital. She regained consciousness a few days later, and she told authorities that her 5-year-old son, Mitchell, had woken up to the attack, and the authorities kind of concluded that whoever it was that nearly killed Aura is the one that took Mitchell, because he was nowhere to be found when Aura was found. After weeks of recovery, Aura was able to tell authorities that on the night she went to the enlisted members club, she had actually turned down a drink from a man that was there, and she thinks that he followed her home. And even though she only caught a glimpse of her attacker, she thinks that it could be the man that she turned down the night before at the club.
Is there a sketch, like a composite sketch of the man from the club?
Not that I could find. The National Center for Missing and Exploited Children doesn't have one, and neither does the Charlie Project website. I, like, plain and simple Googled it, and nothing came up. So, I mean, I'm gonna say no. Not even, like, Reddit had one. So, no, there was no real composite sketch of this man, at least not one that's been released. We do have a description of this man. He was described as 6 feet tall with brown hair, blue eyes. He had a mustache and tattoos on his arms, and he was possibly around 25 years old in 1983. Another suspect came up when Aura recalled a visit from a stranger on the afternoon of the attack. He knocked on the door and identified himself as an officer and was even in uniform. The officer asked Aura about a report that she had made when her purse had been stolen the previous month. The Menlo Park Police Department looked through their records, and there was no record of sending a uniformed officer to her home or at any other time.
Is there a description of the officer who visited her, like, residence?
Not that I could find. I don't know if she never gave one to police, or if she didn't remember, or it wasn't in any reports. But as far as I could tell, he was never really, like, suspected by police. It was something that just happened the same day.
That's awful to think about. The possibility that it could be someone else, because we are, like, from a young age taught, like, police are your friends, you can trust them, you're supposed to go to them if there's an emergency. So to think that there are people who do this pretty often, who posed as law enforcement just to get something they want from you because it lets your guard down, is just super scary.
Absolutely. And I'm not even really going to touch the whole topic of whether or not police are safe with a 10-foot pole, because that's, like, controversial, and that's not what I'm about. But what I do think is that police costumes, like Halloween costumes, should not be sold. Those should not be sold or rented because of situations like this.
Yeah, I agree.
While doing research, I also read in a few different places that Aura got a creepy phone calls for years after Mitchell was abducted. They were always from a man, and he would always threaten to abduct her other two kids. Unfortunately, it was never proven that these calls were related to Mitchell's abduction, but I personally feel that it's, like, pretty obvious that if someone is calling saying they'll take your other children, it's probably pretty safe to say that those two are related. It isn't surprising that the police didn't really do a whole lot. Aura had repeatedly said time and time again that the police did not do their job. And according to one Reddit user, they actually listed 4-year-old Mitchell as a runaway. And Aura says the same thing in an article I found from San Jose Mercury News in June of 2003. A little girl was taken out of her home after her abductor battled her mom and older brother. Aura Owens spoke with the reporter about how the scene was all too familiar, especially after the abduction of Elizabeth Smart here in Utah. Aura is adamant that these from home abductions haven't slowed down at all in this specific article. The author of the article, Kate Folkmar, makes it a point to add that Aura feels like the newer cases, and like I said, this article is from 2003, so they're older now, but it's the same concept, are being handled completely different than when her son went missing.
Did they think that the two incidences could be related or no, because it's so far?
The girl and Elizabeth Smart or the girl and Mitchell?
The girl and Mitchell, since it was both very similar cases.
No, I don't think that was ever a thought. The girl was found. I don't remember the specifics of the case. I just know that she was eventually found, but Aura stepped forward because she was like, listen, this is something that's happening. It's not just in our imagination. We really need police to pay attention. I don't think that they were ever really considered to be related.
Gotcha. I wasn't sure if it was like a kind of Ted Bundy situation where it was happening, like, you know, in other states, so he wouldn't be caught, but it was the same person.
No, I think that the years, I mean, it's too far apart, because you have about 20 years there. So, I mean, unless there were a number of abductions between Mitchell's and this girl's, I think the probability of that is pretty unlikely. But, I mean, it's not impossible. Crazier things have happened. I don't know if you've ever heard of the serial killer Israel Keyes, but he killed all over the United States and wasn't caught for a really long time. And he even has, like, kill kits buried all over the country. People still come across them. It's crazy. It's creepy.
I heard about this one guy who, like, hid kill boxes around, like, the United States that haven't been found. And so he could just, you know, if it was convenient, he would know where one is and use it.
Yeah, it was probably Israel Keyes. He killed anybody and everybody. Like, he had no preference. He was like the Night Stalker, Richard Ramirez. That one's not okay, but they're not the same. They're totally different. Israel Keyes is from Alaska, and I believe he's still serving his sentence there. But he did have kill kits, like, everywhere, and he killed everywhere because he traveled for work. Fun serial killer fact of the day. There you go. There is no doubt in Aura's mind that police handled her missing son's case differently because she was young, she was poor, and she was African American. But she does allege that investigators told her, a single mom, that now she had, quote, one less mouth to feed.
That's awful. To one, even tell a mother, to two, tell a victim that.
I probably would have cut somebody. So, yeah. I mean, it doesn't matter how poor you are. It doesn't matter how broken down and beaten down you are. You don't ever want your child to be missing. Like, you don't ever want one less mouth to feed in that way. You want one less mouth to feed in the way of, you don't want a puppy. Like, not your child. So, if that was said, which I totally believe her, it was shitty, it was rude, and he's a bad cop. And probably a bad person. But that's just my opinion. Whatever. This same article from 2003 also mentions that the authorities didn't get to Aura until 3 days after the attack.
Awful.
Three whole days.
Why did they wait so long?
It didn't say. I'm not sure why. I don't know if it was them prioritizing, if it was a lack of reporting, like, to the police. It just said that there were 3 days between the attack and the authorities actually talking to her. So that is 3 whole days that they could have been looking for Mitchell if that's actually what happened. I mean, like I said, there's no, like, solid proof of that. Case files in California are really hard to get a hold of because there are so many people and there are so many people with the same names. You sometimes have to pay a lot of money for stuff like that because it's hard to get them from the county. It takes a really long time. So I don't have actual court records or case files right in front of me to verify this because it would ultimately cost me a lot of money and a lot of time. So we are going to assume that that is the truth and move on with our lives. So you know that I love to read the theories that are on Reddit. And this time they did not disappoint. One person suggested that it could have been the biological dad, but nothing I've read says anything about him. So I don't think that that really holds any merit. Another theory from a Reddit user that I strongly disagree with is that Aura is responsible for the disappearance of her son. They think it's suspicious that all of these bad things happened around the same time. Like, she was making this stuff up to cover up the fact that she did something to Mitchell. And the most, like, asinine point this user makes is, well, why was a single mom out at a bar with three kids at home? Like, why does it matter that she's a single mom out having a good time? Moms, single or not, deserve a freaking break. So that's just dumb and asinine.
Well, this is also related to, I was watching The Ripper, which is the UK version serial killer on Netflix. And that was the biggest point of why, like, people weren't as afraid of him at first, because the cops just automatically put the label on these women saying that they were prostitutes because they were, like, found in these certain areas, when I think it wasn't until, like, later this woman was looking at all these cases and it's like, no, this was just a single mom who's taking a minute and was at a club and then was deemed as a prostitute. And so then it became that people didn't want to report their attacks because they were afraid that if they reported it, then they would also be labeled as prostitutes, because that became the killer's MO was prostitute rather than, like, any woman. Because then it became, I think he attacked, like, a 16-year-old girl, and the mom was like, she is not a prostitute, like, she's never done, like, anything like that, she's an innocent child, and she got attacked. And so, yeah, it's just awful.
Yeah. Well, and I could go on and on and on about for days about prostitutes and the ridiculousness that is illegal prostitution, but I'm not going to, because this is a podcast about missing children. But also, I haven't watched The Ripper yet. It's on my list. I'm really weird. I have to finish an entire series before I can start anything else. I can't just, like, jump around to stuff unless I'm really bored.
I binge watch everything, so I think I finished The Night Stalker in, like, a day and a half, maybe.
Finished that in one night. I was like, I'm not going to bed until I'm done with this. Because it's only 4 episodes. It was totally worth it. Except for the last episode, they had to keep showing his creepy-ass face, and yeah. So it, yeah,
and I think I finished that one in a day, but I haven't entirely finished The Ripper, but I've gotten to, like, the end of it, where I'm like, okay, I know they caught him, so.
Yeah, right? You're like, okay, well, we're done. Bye! Anyways, my point is, and as far as Aura goes, is the reasoning behind this Reddit user's theory is she was African American and a single mom, and so she killed her son. Like, that was his reasoning. And it was suspicious that she had her purse stolen and that a cop stopped by her house and that she turned down a guy at a bar. Well, why was she at the bar? Like stupid shit, asinine shit. So for me, if it weren't for that little tidbit of him saying, well, why was this single mom out at a bar with her three kids at home? I would, like, actually consider it as a theory. Underneath that same comment, people started to question, like, whether or not her purse was even stolen. And they questioned why the neighbors didn't hear anything. But you know what? People hear stuff all the time and say nothing. How do you think domestic violence happens? I mean, people live in, like, close quarters, and a man can be beating the shit out of his wife and their neighbor will just turn the volume up on their TV. Like, it's not unlikely that somebody heard. They just didn't want to say anything. They didn't want to get involved. The other problem with this theory is that her injuries would have been really hard to self-inflict. She spent weeks in the hospital recovering, and she had been strangled by a telephone cord. Do you have any idea how hard that would be to do to yourself? Your body has like a natural reaction to protect itself. Like when you are drowning, you gasp for air, like in attempt to breathe. Like there's no way that she could have strangled herself with a telephone cord, in my personal opinion. So I think that's dumb. I don't think Aura did something to her youngest child and then tried to cover it up by beating the hell out of herself. I mentioned earlier that the police apparently listed Mitchell as a runaway. And at first I thought it sounds a little bit crazy because he was only 4 years old. But if you really think about it, it's not unlikely that he ran away. If he had walked into the room to see his mom being attacked and her screaming at him to run, why is it unlikely that he ran out the front door? A lot of people on Reddit said, well, why would the 4-year-old, 5-year-old, however old he was, run away? If you're a tiny human, you're scared, you run away, right? Instinctually, he would have wanted to run towards his mom because she's his protector, but he couldn't, so he ran out the door. Scarlett is only 2.5, and I constantly worry that she's gonna go outside by herself. She can open the front door. She can open the screen door. In fact, the other day, she was playing by my dad on the backside of the house, and I went to go feed the chickens, and I came back around to get her, and he said, no, she came back around the garage, and she was not anywhere near outside. Like, I was getting a little bit scared because I'm paranoid. She was in the house sitting on the couch watching a show, like, and that was in like the span of like 10 minutes, not even 10 minutes. So toddlers, small kids are very capable of getting to wherever it is they want to go, is my point. So as a mom of a toddler, I don't think that it's insane to think that he ran away when he saw his mom being attacked and then got lost in the late night. Besides the attacker taking Mitchell, that is my second guess as to what happened to him. Though it does leave some questions, like wouldn't somebody notice a 4 or 5-year-old wandering the streets? Or if he somehow died out there, what happened to his body? But who's to say that someone else didn't take him home and kept him as their own or something more sinister? I also read that the body of a little boy was found in Inglewood, California in 1994. I'll link the Doe Network page in the description box, but it doesn't look like they have a reconstructed photo of the body, but it describes the child found to be between 2 and 5, male with black kinky hair. He was found wearing a white Kmart shirt that had red sleeves and a blue collar, and a plastic diaper. I wish that it was known what Mitchell was wearing when he went missing, but it wasn't in anything that I read. I will mention, though, that when doing the autopsy, they determined that the unidentified child had died between the years of 1987 and 1994. So if this is Mitchell, then whoever killed him kept him for a long time. If this John Doe is Mitchell, I will be really, really surprised. Mostly because Inglewood is like 5.5 hours from Menlo Park. Are you familiar with any of those places?
No, it's NorCal.
Okay.
SoCal girl.
California is too big. I don't go there.
I know. It sounds like the places sound familiar, but I don't know the actual locations of it. It's just far.
Makes sense. So whatever happened to Mitchell, it's hard to say. We don't know. My personal opinion is that he was either taken by the abductor, killed, and his body was never found, or he ran away and somebody took him and either kept him and raised him or did something else. That's my personal opinion. That's my 2 cents with the information that I've given you. And I realize now that I have said that he was either 4 or 5. I also just realized that throughout the episode, I have said that Mitchell was 5. He would have been 4 years old at the time he went missing because of where his birthday lies, but he was between the ages of 4 and 5 when he went missing. Just to clarify, I'm sorry I made that mistake.
Mitchell Owens was missing since February 3rd, 1983. He was missing from Menlo Park, California. His birthday is November 21st, 1978. So he would be 42 years old as of today. He is African American with black hair and brown eyes. On the Missing and Exploited Children page, you can find his age progressed photo. He also has a scar on the upper part of his nose, a surgical scar on the left side of his rib cage, and a lazy right eyelid. If you have any information on the disappearance of Mitchell Owens, you can contact the Menlo Park Police Department in California, or you can call 1-800-843-5678 or 1-800-THE-LOST.
Please remember, see something, say something. So before we close out, we want to bring light to a missing child who doesn't necessarily have much of a story that has been publicized. It would be really hard to do this podcast if I didn't have a story to share. And a lot of these kids that we come across don't actually have a physical story that has been reported. A lot of them, it's just this kid is missing from this place. So we want to bring light to those kids who aren't paid much attention to in the media by telling you their name, where they went missing from, and any information that has been available. So Alexis, do you want to go ahead and do that?
Yeah, absolutely. So the kid that I'm broadcasting today was just posted on the Missing and Exploited Children's Twitter page as of 5 hours ago, and his name is Jose Ramirez. He has been missing since November 5th of 2020 from East Chicago, Indiana. He was born November 8th, 2002, so this year he's going to be 18. He's Hispanic with black hair, brown eyes. He's about 5'9" and weighs about 180 pounds. And that's all the information they have. So if you have any information on his whereabouts or just any information at all, you can call that 1-800-THE-LOST phone number, or you can contact East Chicago Police Department, Indiana.
And what is that number?
It is 1-219-660-0000.
Easy enough, I guess. So if you guys have seen him or heard from him or think you might have seen him, contact the authorities. His photo will be in our social media. Keep an eye out for him. Hopefully we can get him home. Thanks, guys, for listening. I personally love these older cases because they really show us that the world has never really been all rainbows and sunshine. I mean, a lot of people like to think in the old days, and I've mentioned this before, but I like the older cases because they prove that in the old days, not that the 80s was the old days, so don't think that that was the old days. I mean, it was way before I was born, but that's whatever. It just shows that, like, the world has never really been a perfect place. That's why I like the older cases. That's just me.
So guys, remember to follow us over on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at Missing Ones Pod. You can also come join us on our new Facebook discussion group. You can just search the Missing Ones discussion group and hit join, and it's as easy as that. We post different things about just taking any suggestions on what you guys want to hear, or we can talk about cases. It's just a super open, relaxed Facebook page.
Yeah, we want everybody to come there and, like, tell us their favorite true crime story, because though we talk about missing kids, we both love, like, straight up true crime. So we would love to see you on our group.
And most importantly, you don't forget to like and subscribe and share with your friends, because that's how we can get these cases out there.
So we hope you guys have a wonderful week.
Bye.